All right. Welcome, everybody. Thank you for coming here to enlighten us. I know I had some concerns, and so I had to have a little bit of tutoring to get started, but it's complicated, and we have some options that address some of the concern that we had before. So at this time, we'll turn it over to Vanessa.
Is this on? So good morning, commissioners. Thank you for taking the time to hear about two proposals. Before we start, if we can maybe do some introductions of people who will be talking today and be available for some question and answer. Again, for the audience, I'm Vanessa Gaston. I'm the director for Clark County Community Services.
My name is John Herson. I'm Vice President of Care Transformation for Legacy Health and also the Vice Chair of the Regional Health Alliance.
Good morning. I'm Sharon Kroll. I'm an internal medicine physician at the Vancouver Clinic for 20 years and the Chairman of the Board and a board member of the RHA.
Andy Silver. I'm the Executive Director of the Council for the Homeless and I'm also a board member of the Regional Health Alliance.
Brad Berry, I'm the Executive Director of Consumer Voices Are Born, CVAP, and I'm on the board of the Regional Health Alliance.
I'm Connie Mumching with Southwest Washington Behavioral Health.
Hi, I'm Robin Larmer with Stoll Reeves.
David Mendora, County Commissioner.
Tom Milkey, County Commissioner.
Ed Barnes, County Commissioner.
So, for the audience, there's some handouts in the back. It's also on the website, both presentations, so you have access to them. So I'm going to go ahead and get started so we can stay on time. For the presentation that I am going to start with, basically, the counties have to make two decisions in a very short amount of time, and this is part of the state's state's five-year healthcare innovation plan. And they are actually on a very quick timeline to do some quick decision-making for some implementation. So I want to kind of start with the first slide, Tracy, thank you, to talk about what they're trying to fix in the current Medicaid system. So one is they have concerns, and actually this is a national problem, about how payment is made to providers. Right now, payment is made through what's called a fee-for-service system, and it actually rewards volume and not quality, so they are looking at changing that to pay for performance. The other thing is that patients are forced to go to many places for different kind of care, for mental health, substance use, and medical. It's difficult in accessing it for people that are very vulnerable, and it's also very fragmented. Coordination is not done very well. So they are looking to change that and actually integrate these systems, the funding, and also these systems. And then the last bullet is that, you know, physician offices deal with a lot of people with a lot of issues, and they just don't have the ability to help with those transportation, housing kinds of issues that need to be dealt with. So they're realizing that health care is actually bigger than just medical care. So the state wants to tackle these problems as part of their five-year plan. Go ahead and trace the next slide. This is currently a slide of how Medicaid contracting is done right now in Washington State. There is two main agencies that are involved. The federal government gives the state of Washington Medicaid funds through a block grant. Healthcare Authority, which means HCA, is the lead Medicaid agency that is responsible for the Medicaid oversight. They contract for the medical part as well as for mental health, and they do that currently through five managed care plans. DSHS, Department of Social Health Services, contracts the rest of the system through contracts directly, first for substance use. That goes for outpatient services. That goes to the counties across the state, but they continue to manage inpatient drug and alcohol services. For the chronic and severe mental health, those contracts go to the regional support networks, and there are 11 of them across the state. And then the final area is the long-term care and physical disability, which are contracts to the area agency on agency, and there's 13 of those across the state. So as you can see, there's four different systems, four different contracting systems, four different admins that have to be paid for, and there's also very much a lot of problems with coordination across those different systems. And they feel like this is not sustainable, and it needs to change. Next slide. As part of that five-year plan, there are two legislative bills that are impacting the outcomes of that plan. And in those bills, Senate Bill 6312 and also the House Senate Bill 2572, there's a lot of strategies to help them accomplish what they want to accomplish, but I just want to pull out some of the main ones that I'm going to talk about today. First decision that had to be made from the counties is they want to create what they call regional service areas, and counties had to make a decision as to what region they wanted to be part of. Clark County already had, and our Commissioner Mielke, Commissioner Madore at the time, both agreed to stay in Southwest Washington. That decision was already made. We had to make it at the end of May. That's going to be presented on Friday to the legislative task force to look at where counties are kind of fleshed out. Not all counties made a decision. There's like three of them that are still pending. So that's not quite final. But they do want that completed and decided by the end of July. The next decision has to be made is the state actually wants to move to full Medicaid integration by January 1st of 2020. And I'm going to talk about two models that they're asking counties to choose is what is the pathway to get to that full integration. And we'll talk about that in a few minutes, but that's the next big decision the counties have to make. And then again, as I mentioned before, provider contracts shifting from paying for volume to paying for quality, that will be huge in our system. And then the community of health kind of concept, which are these regional organizations that include multiple diverse stakeholders and partners to focus on improving care and helping reduce costs. And you've met many of the representatives that are part of our community of health, which is the Regional Health Alliance. So a lot of work has been gone in our region to work on these plans, but I'm going to kind of, next slide, Tracy, talk about what this looks like in 2020 for the state. So as you remember the slide before, there were four separate systems. By January 1st of 2020, this is what they want it looking like. They want the funding integrated into one system, have a global budget, and they want it to be sent through risk-bearing entities, health plans, to kind of help to deal with some of this transition for payment for providers, but also look at system transformation. So this is their goal. It's in legislation. It's going to happen. It passed, and this is what they're moving towards. Next slide. So the question for us as a county, and every county has to make this decision, is what is our pathway to get from today to 2020? And again, they have approved a timeline, and so I'm going to talk about the one of the models. Next slide, Tracy. Which is the early adopter model. And then Connie will talk about the behavioral health model after I finish with the fully early adopters. So basically, one of the models is they're giving counties, as you pick a region, they're asking for the regions to have a chance and an opportunity to look at, would you like to become an early adopter and move into full integration earlier than 2020? Which they're looking at starting January 1st of 2016. As an incentive, if you do this, they are looking at giving up to 10% of estimated savings for that six-year period. It's only offered to the early adopters. And they're also looking at what that means is that counties would then work with healthcare authority to look at what this process would look like. And then the healthcare authority would be responsible for the contracts that would go to the health plans or similar-like risk-bearing entities. For the counties, also is you're shifting financial responsibility from ourselves, from the counties, because behavioral health organizations, every one exception of one, are managed by counties. To the health plans. And then if we do early adopter, there's no additional changes that we need to prepare for by 2020. We would have made the changes. We would have a chance to influence the system as well as help our providers make that shift. Next slide. So what I did is I had a chance to sit down with our budget office, members of from our, my department, as well as treasurer's office and the auditor's office, to kind of look at what are the pros and cons. What is we a county is the right direction for us, but also for our citizens. And as we went through this, this is the list of the pros and the cons that we came up with. First, on the pro side, you know, there is that savings that they're offering for 6 years. That they're allowing for the communities to determine how to reinvest. We also determined that, you know, the funding integrated into one budget system leads to, you know, better coordinated care. We know many examples of people who cannot access care going through the many systems, so it's a better system for people that are vulnerable. They've actually saying that regions to determine whether it's a behavioral health organization or early adopter, for people that are on Medicaid, they actually lowered the number from 70,000 to 65,000. So in Clark County alone, we have over 100,000 folks on Medicaid, so we definitely meet that criteria. It's also, they're saying, and they have put this in writing, that it's giving those counties a chance to really change and influence how it would work and have some local control in how that system could be set up to be prepared for 2020 when everybody across the state has to do it. And then also, as the budget office worked and took a look at this, it really moves the responsibility of financial liability and some of those mandates that come, whether it's from the federal or state government, from county-run behavioral health organizations to health plans or similar like kind of risk-bearing entities. The cons, of course, is that there will be no RSN or BHO in Southwest Washington region. All the counties in our region will have to agree to be early adopter, and so far we have two counties who said they want to be in Southwest Washington, so that's Skamania and Clark, and Klickitat is one of the counties that hasn't decided, and part of that is because they want to make sure that people that live in Goldendale still have accesses to Yakima and can go over to Hood River. And then the other folks that live closer to Skamania, those are the folks that come to Skamania and Clark County, so they don't want to make sure, they want to make sure that their citizens can still get services in those other areas. And then there is a short timeline. Regardless of what we do, the short timeline is there. We have about 19 months to kind of make these shifts and changes. Next slide. What we talked about as conversation with the Regional Health Alliance is, okay, well, what needs to happen, you know, organized to become this early adopter for fund integration, and who's involved, and what would it take? So part of what we feel where we're prepared and why we think we're ready is we do have this public-private partnership with the Regional Health Alliance. We have the two hospitals at the table. We have four health plans at the table who would have to be involved. We also realize we have major providers. We have Consumer Voice at the table. We have our tribe, Calis Tribe at the table. We have the county representation that would be involved at the table. So we think that we have who needs to be at the table to have this conversation as we work through many challenges to do this. We also realize that when we talk about counties, all of the aspects of the counties have been involved in the Regional Health Alliance. So whether it's Human Services, Public Health, but we have included representation from Clark County jails. So we are having them conversations much broader than just medical care, also the impacts to our jails, our court systems, all of that. So we're looking at the much broader picture in our community and region as to how this would impact us. Next slide. This also gives us an opportunity that we really are excited about is with our local funds. So currently, we have two main pots of money that we use for chemical dependency and also our substance use and also mental health services that we have been pretty much plugging the gaps for a lot of the CIS services in our region. If we move in this direction, what this allows is for us to kind of refocus how we use our local funds. We currently use the funds to fund Teen Talk, which is a kind of early intervention preventative program for kids who are in mental health crisis. Consumer Voices are Born, which is a consumer-run organization that does a number of services for early intervention and prevention, recovery-type services in our community. We have our Safety Communities Task Force that works with people that are impacted by gangs. We have our Mending for Results with children that are also having behavioral health issues. We also will still need to do some aspects of treatment for individuals that are not eligible for Medicaid who are in our criminal justice system, so we can't forget about that. We still have to make sure that we're dealing with that population. And then there is a special program done through the Children's Center that we would want to continue to support that supports our family treatment court that's not paid for through Medicaid. So we want to make sure we continue with that. But services that we have not been able to fund that we want to take a look at is sobering services. That is a service that we can provide and offer that will not be covered by Medicaid that helps our jails. And this is for people that are drunk on the street or high that are in the park. parks that are on the corner in front of businesses. We can look at, can we put them someplace for up to 12 hours and then can try to connect them to treatment if they're not on Medicaid? Can we get them on Medicaid? That will not be covered by Medicaid, so that's something we can look at. We can offer it into the Center of Community Health. We'll also look at some more, how can we do more substance use recovery services? So as people are in recovery, not using alcohol or drugs, can we pay for more recovery services that keeps them sober in our community? Community health workers that are really community focused, that help connect people to the various services, that's not paid for by Medicaid, that's something we can focus on. Do some real good work, more work around prevention and early intervention for programs such as marijuana, you know, more around alcohol and all that. Right now we just don't have the funds to direct in that area. Expand our mental health first aid program, help educate families in the community around what is mental health, but also what can they do, what are some of the early signs. Currently right now the RSN works with NAMI around crisis intervention training. Our manager for crisis services is one of the main trainers for this, but we'd like to expand on this and make sure more of our sheriff and all of our other jurisdictions take advantage of it. City of Vancouver has done a really good job of this, but we want to make sure it's still in our community. And then again, support services to assist in care and integration. You know, how can we make sure that whatever's not paid for out of Medicaid that's there as people are trying, as providers are trying to integrate mental health, substance use, and medical services, what's missing that is needed to help people stay in those services? And then last is...
Before you go to the next slide, I didn't want to leave that slide. So basically, as we move drug and alcohol and mental health into the new program, the meth tax that we have out there today would allow us to do more things in the direction of substance abuse or mental health that we don't do today?
More around prevention and early intervention or recovery that we don't do today. Because right now we pay for like detox, we pay for treatment, inpatient, outpatient. That sucks up a lot of money. We put a lot of money in it.
So we're not paying for that substance abuse recovery services?
We are. We have a federal grant for that that's going to come to an end, and we'd like to keep it going with using some local funds.
But we're not paying for that portion of it.
Not with local funds.
With the meth tax.
No.
So these are things that we would...
Take a look at.
As we transfer that into the other part of the health care, then the meth tax will be available to do other things.
Yes.
So is I'm concerned that we can legally do that, or is it specifically when that tax was passed, was it specific for meth and drug abuse?
So I don't know if Bob or Chris want to answer that, but it's called the meth tax, but it was really meant to help mental health and people with chemical dependency issues. So we use it for both. Mental health and chemical dependency. And we've been using it for treatment, but some of these services here, as long as you can show that a person has a diagnosis and that you're helping them while they're in treatment, pretty much has been legal. And some of these are being provided in other parts of the county, such as in King.
So we've got related questions. Not every county in the state has a meth tax that does some of these things. And you said earlier, health care is more than medical care. And I would think that these kinds of things would fall into the category of what this whole integrated system ought to do. So the difference, we have a meth tax that would be funneling those funds into this big one bucket, single bucket, in contrast to those other counties that don't have that. How do you sort that out so that we're not just simply contributing more than other counties proportionally?
So in our region, I can speak for Skamania, they have the mental health tax. They also they have the meth tax as well. I don't know about Klickitat. We would have to check into that. Their main behavioral health provider is out of Yakima, and he wants to continue to provide those services. He is a very large provider. So I would imagine that Klickitat is probably taken care of quite a bit. So
and still, you've got this kind of model that will unfold in different regions across the state. Mm-hmm. And those regions, some have meth taxes, some don't.
Mm-hmm.
And I would so there's a amount that's contributed that needs to cover these mm-hmm. things, right? That this overall integrated mm-hmm. system should cover. And so the question is, how do they... Mm-hmm. We'd be contributing more if we have our local tax compared to those other counties that don't. I'm not thinking of the three here. I'm thinking of other areas in the state. How do you make that equitable?
So from my understanding of the 39 counties, I think it's 21. I don't know, Connie. Do you know how many? 29 counties have the meth tax. Everybody gets the mental health property tax. So 29 okay. counties. So there's 10 counties. Most of them are small rural counties in eastern Washington. The only big urban one is Pierce. And philosophically, they just have a disagreement with the state about that. What that means is those communities are going to be treated or are going to have lack of access to those services. And it'll probably be a bit of an unfair system because they will not have services that currently they don't have. They're not using that to plug those gaps. And so those folks are either having to travel a distance to get the help or they do without.
Okay. So the assumption is that either they would do without or they would end up having to create their own taxes so that we all end up providing that same channel of funds into this big bucket. And the integration of this whole thing, those are local funds. Those, and I assume that the other main flow of funds, the Medicaid funds, are going into this big budget that everybody's going to draw from.
So the Medicaid is strictly for treatment. There is strict requirements of how you can spend Medicaid. You can't spend it on many of these services. And that's the pot of money that's going to be integrated into a global budget. This money stays at the county for the counties to determine how they want to spend it. So this is our decision of how we want to spend it.
So this is not to be integrated into the early adopter at all? This is completely separate?
No. This is just giving the commissioners an idea of how we could look at how do we prevent some of these chronic diseases that are causing people to go to jail or ending up in the emergency room, that we could try to do our part to make people healthier. But we make the decision.
Okay. So whatever decisions we choose going forward for integration through 2016 or 2020, this is just simply in addition, kind of by the way.
Yes. This is our
unaffected by these decisions.
Yep. Now, I will say the legislative task force has asked, you know, from the counties, the 29 counties, what are you spending your money on? That will be first shot presented on Friday by WASAC to the legislative steering committee. What we have shared with her as county representatives is that they need to be clear to the state that this pot of money is off hands. This is not to be integrated in that pot, that that's Medicaid and state general fund money that they're talking about for integration. So this really remains local control.
Which I would think if we have the leadership here with the local control with the RHA, that's part of our voice that says hands off our own local program. This is our taxes. This is what we're doing. We have control of that.
Yes.
You mentioned that there are two decisions that need to happen in a quick timeline. What
the first decision we made was the region. So we chose Southwest Washington.
So that's already made.
That's already made.
Well, and each one, in other words, our neighbors make their own choice whether or not they're. So we're kind of a hub here. So it's a question of will Skamania and Klickitat join us?
And Skamania County has. So Skamania County turned in a resolution. Both of you two signed a letter that went forward. And then Klickitat County, again, is undecided for the reasons I mentioned earlier. They want to be able to have people access services in Yakima and Clark County.
Okay, so if that first, if there's two decisions, that one's already made. We only have one decision. That's whether or not to go early adopter or integration in two steps instead of one.
Yep.
Okay.
Next slide.
Could I ask you a question? You say 2020 is the date that this has to be done by, and if I'm listening to Commissioner Bedore and Milkey, that would mean if you want to take advantage of the 10% discount or whatever you want to call it that they're willing to offer if you go first or go quicker than the rest of them, is that the benefit that would happen for Clark County by getting that extra money here for additional benefits?
If you do early adopter and go first for early full integration, and it won't just be Clark, you would have to look at Skamania and Klickitat too. It would be the region.
The region. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And even though the 2020 is really the finish date when everything's all said and done, do I understand correctly that this decision that was already made, we are a hub with Southwest Washington, the decision needs to be made up front as to who's going to partner together. Are we going to be early adopter, or are we going to be the two-step?
Yes.
And if we're early adopter, that's something that Click-A-Tat will then decide.
Yes.
Maybe will decide whether or not they want to. They don't have the option of, if they want another choice, they'd have to go east to be able to pick non-early adopter, right?
So, yes, and so we've been in conversations with Skamania County. They actually will use the same presentation and do their commissioners next. They are very much interested in looking at early adopter as well. They want to hear both presentations, so they'll get the same thing you are doing. As Commissioner Brong mentioned at the last RSM board meeting, Click-A-Tat County, you know, they're not as engaged in health care, you know, very much at all. They're pretty much not even engaged that much in public health. So I think what they're doing is listening to their medical providers and their behavioral health provider in the direction they should go. So that will probably be based on what those providers want, what direction they would be. They're just not following it.
Okay. So the decision needs to be made to select early adopter or the other model when?
So they want, they plan, the legislative task force, the timeline has come out. They want to make a final recommendation by September 1st, 2014, as to what the regions look like and who's doing BHOs and who's doing early adopters. So I would say we need to make a decision by August. Turn it into WASAC and the state so they can put it as part of that overall flat map of the state. So the next slide, and then I'm going to ask the rest of my presenters to
take. I do have one more question, and that is assuming that what we are doing is we are going to create a brand new entity that does not exist today, and that entity will absorb chemical dependency, the RSN, and is some form of physical health. Right?
Well, part of my recommendation is going to be, I am going to recommend that we do early adopter, and I'm going to go over a slide towards the end. I want Connie to do her presentation first. But we need to sit down with healthcare authority and come to some negotiations about what this looks like. What does that model look like? What the process looks like? And come to some agreement. So I can't tell you what it looks like right now.
So on the point you just brought up about partnering with our local healthcare providers and whatnot, the early adopter has state money going directly to those providers.
It would go through a managed care risk-bearing entity contracting, and they would then subcontract to the providers.
It wouldn't come to us and then to
no.
them. And that takes us out of the picture.
Yes, yes. It would go directly that way.
At no cost to Clark County, right?
No cost to Clark County. But what I do want to push for, and this is part of the negotiations, and we would ask a commissioner to come to that meeting if they would like to, as we sit down with healthcare authority, is we're given some oversight. We get to choose who some of those risk-bearing entities or health plans are, and that we also have some say and how they're performing, because we also want them to work with us, and we also want to make sure that if something goes wrong, they will come and sit down with us and work out on a solution, because we don't need our jails impacted. We don't want our court system, because we still do crisis impacted. So we still want them to work with us.
One more question.
Yeah.
In this picture, we show also Southwest Washington Aging and Disabilities, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is that part of the integration package as well?
Yes. So what they have told the AAAs is that as they do the phase-in process, their funds will be integrated, but as far as the BHO, they won't put that money in the BHO, that they will have to subcontract with the health plans. And so in my conversations with David Kelly, unfortunately, they haven't really allowed the AAAs to have as much say as they've allowed the RSNs to have some influence, but they are going to have to work with whatever health plans are in place.
And David Kelly is part of the RHA?
He is part of the RHA.
And he's good with this?
He is strong.
He's part of the, he prefers early adopter?
He has preferred a part of the early adopter. He's actually on the finance committee, took over as chair. John used to be chair. He's one of the co-chairs.
Great.
So One of the things I also want to talk to you about is I mentioned earlier about the community of health, which is another major part of this five-year plan, is because these organizations are very key and crucial in how the system changes. So we have created a regional health alliance, and our goal is to have all these providers come together with the counties and really look at how do we work with these health plans as we look at these different changes. Tracy, next slide. And we are a nonprofit, so we're independent, so it's not sitting in any particular healthcare system, not Peace Health, not Legacy, not Kaiser. It's not any particular county, because you're dealing with three counties. So it's really independent. We have diverse, wide representation on our board, but our whole goal is to make sure that people on Medicaid get the best possible care. We're also looking at the uninsured, and we would like to focus on people with on Medicare. But right now, it's Medicaid, and our goal is to look at can we deliver better health, better care to individuals, and at the same time reduce costs, because everybody is looking at how do we save money through this system. So we are, this is a public-private partnership. It's not a government organization, so we believe we have the right people at the table. The state is planning to apply for a very large federal grant. They mentioned that yesterday, asking for $100 million. They're going to take 20% of that if they are awarded that money and put it towards these communities of health to help fund these different activities in the community. So they're planning to invest very much big time into a lot of the work that will be happening through the RHA and others across the state. Next slide. These are the board members. It's a big board. We realize we'd rather be more inclusive than exclusive. We know this isn't realistic long term, that we're going to probably have to shorten and streamline, you know, this board a bit. But right now we need everybody at the table to help bring the best minds and the best ideas as we go through this and create this. This is something that hasn't happened in our state ever. So this is something that we all have to come together and solve and be part of the solution. So this is currently our board for the Regional Health Alliance. Next slide. I'm going to have moved to Connie, but before I do that, I want to give our presenters a chance who are part of the Regional Health Alliance a chance to talk as to why they support early adopter, because they have specific reasons coming from their perspective, and we've had lots of conversations about this. This has taken us about 6-7 months to come to this conclusion, but I'm going to hand it over to the next group.
Great. Again, my name is John Herson. I'm with Legacy Health. I'm the Vice President of Care Transformation, as well as the Vice Chair of the Regional Health Alliance. And I'm here today representing both organizations in support of the early adopter model. And what I want to do is just really quickly share my experiences and perspectives from the Oregon experience, from the CCO perspective, in terms of how an integrated model can work and can demonstrate improvements for this very fragile population and community that we're responsible for providing care for. I had the opportunity in my role with Legacy to serve as the interim chief operating officer of HealthShare of Oregon. I basically played in some ways Vanessa's role in bringing the community together to form that organization. For background, HealthShare of Oregon is Oregon's largest CCO. It is an organization that is responsible for now over 220,000 members in the Portland metropolitan area. And HealthShare of Oregon is a collaboration of basically all of the healthcare organizations in the metropolitan area. So it's a collaboration of all of the health plans, all of the health systems, behavioral health, the community at large, counties, and its goal is essentially to improve the health of the Medicaid population that we serve. And I fully recognize that Oregon is very different than Washington. They are different states, different perspectives on healthcare, but what I would like to leave you with in terms of the benefits of integration are some of the outcomes that we've seen in terms of bringing all of these parties together in a fully integrated model under a global budget and some of the successes. So over the past year, we've seen a significant decrease in emergency department and inpatient utilization for this population, double-digit decreases in both ED visits and inpatient visits for this population. We've seen a significant increase in the number of primary care assignment and primary care visits for this population. So while access continues to be a challenge, we've seen increases in access and increases to primary care for this population. We've seen significant work and increases in the integration between primary care and behavioral health and chemical dependency. We all know that this population has multiple issues, and an organization like HealthShare has enabled the primary care community, the behavioral health community, the chemical dependency community to come together and work together towards bettering the care for this population. We've seen a lot of flexibility in funding. You may have heard the air conditioner story. We talk about the sleeping bag story where an individual who was living in his car would just not engage with the system, extremely overweight, many mental health issues. And an outreach worker made a connection with this individual because she was able to buy this individual a sleeping bag and made the connection and has now gotten him into care, and he's on a path that is much better than was previously. From a financial perspective, we've seen the integration move the dial in terms of the finances. We have been successful, and many of the other CCOs have been successful in living within their global budget. Medicaid, the money's the money. There's only a certain pot. You have to live within that budget, and an organization, a fully integrated organization, allows organizations to come together to make the decisions that allow you to do that. And then finally, there's just an unquantifiable benefit to having historical competitors sit in the same room working towards the betterment for a community, and Medicaid provides a fantastic opportunity for that to happen, and it's a community and a population that needs that collaboration, and a fully integrated model allows that to occur.
I'm here to tell you a little bit today about what it's like to take care of Medicaid folks as a physician, both on an individual basis and on the leader of a major health care provider in Vancouver. Stories work best for me, so I'm going to tell you about Mary. Mary's 38. Mary's appointment with me stated diabetes, migraines. Mary's diabetic. She's on insulin. She needed a refill. She's 270 pounds. When I asked her about her diet, she told me that the only grocery store nearby is an AMPM mini mart. That's where she buys most of her meals. I've been in there. That's not a good place for a diabetic to go grocery shopping. Mary has terrible migraines. I've been trying to treat them for years with standard medical therapy. I'm having no luck. When I talk to Mary about her life, I understand why I'm having no luck. Stress is a very important cause of migraine headaches, and Mary has an extraordinarily stressful life. Started out at 13 being sexually abused, on the street at 16, pregnant at 17, found a husband that treated her like her father did. I could go on, but she has housing insecurity, food insecurity. She's raising her two-year-old granddaughter. Her daughter's addicted to meth. Mary's life is a mess. So I can give her all the migraine medicines in the world. They're not going to work. So what does she do? Two, sometimes three times a month, she's in the emergency room getting a shot of pain medicine on the weekend for her migraine headaches at extraordinary cost. What a waste. So if we can develop a system that allows me, as Mary's treating physician, who's dealing with the tip of a huge iceberg, to pull in the resources from the behavioral health community and the social service sector in a way that Mary can access them, those services are available now, but it's all on Mary's back to access them. She has to go, and it's hard for her to go. She's got a two-year-old granddaughter. She has no car. Can we build something better that will actually meet the needs of people like Mary? Because there's a lot of them in our community. From a business standpoint, from an owner of a major medical group, we've been in the news. For years, we've been a major provider of Medicaid services for the population, and we've been proud to provide that service. And we're heartbroken that funding has come to the point where we are paid 40% of the cost of seeing a Medicaid patient. Medicaid's not our only line of business. We need to be here for the community. And so we've reached a point where something needs to be done that's financially sustainable, that truly meets the needs of these people. I believe the early adopter model will get us there sooner.
I'm going to talk a little bit about the perspective in my work at the Council for the Homeless. I'm not sure I could say it a lot better than Mary's story, so I'll be brief. But from our perspective, there's no question that full integration is the best model of care for people who have multiple challenges, which is a big part of the population we work with. It's a big part of the Medicaid population. In terms of early adopter, I think there are a few benefits that we see. One, it's just we've been waiting as a community for this for a long time, and I don't want to wait any longer. The people we work with, people like Mary, have needs now. Two, there's the financial incentive that we talked about that we could keep in the community, and three, there is, I think, an opportunity for us locally to help shape the model that works best for our community, and I'm afraid that we'll lose that if we wait till 2020. If we wait till 2020, I think the state is more likely to come down and say this is the way that everybody has to do it, and if we go first, we'll have more of an opportunity to bring in this idea of the community of health and all the partners and really shape something together that just works the best for folks in our community who need to access housing services, physical health services, behavioral health services, and all these other things in a very complicated way today.
Well, the early adopter plan is to give it all to the state. And that's the idea of the early adopter. Instead of doing it in portions, we just step up and do it by 2016.
Yeah, integrate
the whole thing and
put the
take
funding
the county
together
out of that portion of it.
It would integrate it all in one budget and contract it down to managed care plans instead of to mental health CD and physical health. It's two separate systems. It would put it together for managed care plans to look at for providers across the network.
So would I take care of a patient that has, say, Regions health insurance? If that patient needs a psychiatrist, Regions manages that. Now if my patient needs a psychiatrist, it's in a whole different world that I don't have a good connection to. The fragmentation makes it very hard and, I believe, more expensive to take care of these folks.
So at the county level today, if people need services, at the county level we go out and we provide those services. This guy go back up to the state, and the state's going to come back and go out and provide all those services. Are they going to go back and use the same people to provide those services?
You mean the providers, provider community? We hope
that's what we're doing today at the county level. We go out to the providers.
We contract with the providers.
In this case, the state's going to come down and contact the same providers.
The state would go to health plans who would work with those providers.
Yes.
So the RSN is a health plan. So the state is using health plans to contract.
So they're
working through. We're hoping that and our goal is to keep, that's why the providers at the table, is to keep our provider network.
The RSN is mental health.
And mental
it's
health only, yes.
BOH or BHO. It's going to become a BHO. We won't have the RSN.
No, it would be chemical dependency and mental health would be a BHO.
Yes.
Yeah. So a definition. Full integration is to occur by what month in 2020?
January.
January 1st, 2020. And early adopter moves that up to full integration by 2016, what month?
January.
January in 2016. So
yes.
That's really early. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Brad?
Again, I'm Brad Berry with CVAB. We are a peer-run organization. We are people who are in recovery, either mental health and or addiction recovery. So we're we've have the lived experience. We serve over 3,000 people. 30% were uninsured up until recently, and I haven't seen the statistics lately of those coming in, how many are insured now, but a lot of them saw a lot of gaps in their services. We have had a wake-up call in 2006 when the National Association of State Mental Health Program Directors put out a report that said that 60% of the people with serious mental illness die 25% or 25 years younger than the general population. And that was a real wake-up call for us because we knew it. We just never had anybody validate that through research. And then through that research, we saw that a lot of the reasons that people with serious mental illness were dying earlier in the states that they went through and looked at was because of issues with their own health. It was treatable conditions from the medical side. But a lot of those went untreated because of access to care, their own issues, their own fears, their own anxieties, perceived stigmas, and just being able to get into those healthcare environments where they understood what was going on with the person, the mental health side of it, and how to really wrap around services. So since then, we've been looking at wellness and total wellness, and one of the things that that report suggested, and we've seen over and over, and I was part of some calls 6 years ago on the national peer level talking about healthcare integration, we think it's a great idea. The sooner the better. We had hoped it would have happened long before this. And that's why we're supporting Early Adopter. I've informally polled a number of participants in our center recently coming up to this date and kind of used a shell game to talk about this, that, which way would be best. They all think integration would be great. The sooner the better. They are concerned about some of the stigmas that exist. They are concerned that, you know, within healthcare they may be seen a different way, or within even within a drug and alcohol service, because they are first presenting as with mental health, they may be seen differently. But they also know that through education that can change. So we really support Early Adopter. Let's do it as so that we can educate as we go and show others how it can be done, so that people who live a life in recovery really understand that they are cared for, and we can help the medical systems and all the other parts of the system work together to understand recovery and that it's possible. And again, so that we live a little longer, that would be the primary goal for us in our community.
So along those same lines, one of the biggest concerns that we kept hearing from the families of developmentally disabled was that they would fall through the cracks and not get the special care that they need. This might stop that.
Yeah, I had a chance to present to the Developmental Disability Advisory Board, where a lot of parents sit on, and they are very much interested in this because they want to be at the table, because there is a lot that needs to be done for that population. But they are frustrated at the different systems because they can't seem to get to all of it to have it addressed. So this would be a way for us to work on that, those kinds of issues. And then briefly, I'll let Jared, and then we're going to hand over to Connie.
Okay.
I'm Jared Stanford. I'm the CEO of Lifeline Connections. Lifeline is the largest provider of chemical dependency treatment in the area in South of Washington. We provide some very necessary services that no other provider provides in the area. And from a behavioral health perspective, Lifeline provides CD services also and some mental health services. Integrated care is key. You know, 60% of the individuals we serve have a co-occurring disorder. They have a chemical dependency and a mental health issue, let alone primary care conditions they have as well. Right now, you know, you talked about the issues that people with developmental disabilities families have about coordination. That's the key in my mind with integration, is coordination. Having an entity coordinate across all these systems, bringing these people together and providing the best care. My responsibility as executive of my agency is to make sure we have good outcomes with our people. We get public funds. I want to make sure I'm a good steward of those funds. And so it's difficult sometimes when we have different silos of treatment, different money, and we can't cross that. There's duplication. There's people being not getting the care they need. And what happens is we end up spending more taxpayer money on maybe some services that aren't needed, or services that aren't provided. And what happens is that individual ends up in an ED, an ER situation, costing the taxpayer more money. Integration is key. It's going to be better for outcomes for people. It's going to save, ultimately, if it's done right and given the correct oversight, local oversight, it's going to save the taxpayer money. And from a behavioral health perspective, this is a long time coming. And Lifeline is supportive of integrated care and speeding that process up, because once again, once we align chemical dependency and mental health and primary care, the outcomes will be much better than they are today.
I want to thank you for your services and Lifeline. We truly believe that's part of our community and a key portion of it. My fear as we move into this new venture is that we don't end up with something like we have in the Veterans Administration. And when you become a huge conglomerate, I'm afraid we might lose that personal care that we're able to provide today. So thank you again. Commissioner Madore.
Sure. So January 2020, it will be fully integrated. So this is not a question of should we fully integrate or not. That's not an option. It really has to do with what's the most effective way to get there in one step or two.
Yes.
Two steps, I can imagine that we could, make it bite-sized, do this chunk first and then do the other. But in reality, it sounds like we'd be paying twice, going through two major structural changes, and the delay of integrating these multiple siloed specialty areas would cause the continued problems that are present today just to drag out longer. The one thing that I'm aware of is that each one of us are here because there are people that have real needs. And we are, and I expect when you're talking about someone who's got chemical dependency or any kind of addiction, or basically you're looking at people that don't necessarily have the responsibility or the ability to be able to go out and take initiative and get help here, go help there, get help there, and be able to expect them to take and do that on their own, versus someone that sees all these different areas of help that can guide that person, have resources for provide those resources through that. So you're taking that expectation from this patient, and you're really empowering the caregiver to be able to provide those services. Do I understand that right? Okay.
Yes.
Yeah. Question I need to ask, I haven't heard that so far, and I'm not familiar with just getting my feet in the water on this whole program. One of the things that that really concerns me about healthcare, no matter what it is the emergency rooms at the hospitals. And I don't know how you guys integrate with the urgency care clinics that are all over Clark County, how you integrate with the regular clinics, and how you integrate with the hospitals and all these other organizations. Is that all going to be part of pulling this together? Are the urgency care clinics and the regular clinics and the hospitals are going to be combined into this by January of 2020 regardless?
We're pretty close already. Part of taking care of patients from the medical end is having access to records from all of these settings. Anyone with a computer practicing medicine can tap into ER and hospital records at both hospitals. We at the Vancouver Clinic will soon be launching a link that lets anybody in the community have read access to our medical records. So the medical community is on the way to being fully integrated as far as information sharing.
So when a person comes in, you provide them or push them to the right organization to get taken care of? Same way with the emergency rooms at the hospital?
The emergency rooms really are designed for that. Are you really sick and you need to stay in the hospital, or can you go home? And then the coordination goes back. Coordination of care is done in the outpatient setting at the primary care level.
So I think you asked if I was to go to the clinic, a local clinic, is it handled the same way?
So if
I were to go to, if the individual were to go to the clinic instead of the hospital, the clinic is still a part of that organization and they'll be paid for?
Clinics are paid by insurance companies. We contract with insurance companies, and we are paid by unit of work
by the insurance company.
We're contrasting a large centralized federal system, the Veterans Administration, and the failures that we all have heard about recently. That's an exercise in huge centralized bureaucracies not being a very good solution for us. In contrast, the RHA, all of these members are local members, relatively. And this is, we're not talking about a state or a federal agency or bureaucracy dictating or controlling our local area. This stands in contrast to that top-down approach. This is really bottom-up. All of these, it's really quite amazing that all of these members that we've seen are able to pull together, which would, in some way, there's some competition going in there, but pulling together as a community. It's a much encouraging. There is some danger, I think we're all aware of, that if we pull together these different individuals or organizations, these different silos, into a centralized system, there's some danger there that we are building a larger bureaucracy. But we do not have the choice. It's a matter of, are we going to be in the driver's seat leading that with our local organizations in charge of that, or are we going to be is that going to be top down without our leadership, without our organization having a voice in that? And I would much rather have local control in the voice of this. Also, it appears that not only are we discovering our way here, there's a path that we need to be able to plot out on the map how we're going to get there. But the state doesn't quite know where they're going yet. And if we just leave it up to them and just tell us what to do, not likely it's going to be very optimized in comparison. So being that these things are not fully defined yet, the process of us being a pioneer community will help the state to get it more right. So I like the idea also of being in the lead rather than the following position.
Yes, and we're fortunate that we're in a medical community where we all can sit down around the table and say, we have this problem here in Clark County, let's work together to solve it. It's not true everywhere.
Okay, I think that we're down to our last 5 minutes.
So, Commissioner Mick, I apologize. If you could just bear a little bit, because we'd like for Connie to give her presentation.
Connie's sitting down here, I knew
and
that.
So we move straight to Connie.
Good morning, Commissioner. I was asked to give you a 10-15 minute overview of the BHO, so we will do our very best.
5 minutes.
We're going to speed talk to see what we can do. So basically, the legislative bill 6312 have pretty much provided an overall vision for the state that is full integration of mental health, chemical dependency, and physical health. So the question that each county need to ask themselves is, how fast did you move? Did you move forward with full integration by January 2016, or did you start up with a phased-in approach, and that is starting with a BHO, and then eventually move with full integration by 2020? So Mark going to start out by covering slide 1 to 9, and I will provide you an overview of the basic contractual requirement for BHO.
Mark Bollinger, Chief Clinical Officer at SWBH. If we can just go straight to slide 3. Okay, this is really who SWBH RSN serves. It's the moderate to severe acute and chronic population within a 3-county region, which is currently Clark County and Clark, Cowlitz, and Skamania counties. We have about 125,000 covered lives, and the county breakdown is right there. Next slide. We really provide outpatient services, some residential services, and other supportive services to the Medicaid population, and crisis services for the whole population, Medicaid and non-Medicaid, throughout that region, and that's the emergency mental health or crisis response. Next slide, please. This is just the current funding streams. Vanessa touched on it quickly, but for the mental health system, DSHS basically gives it to the RSN, which is that's what Southwest Washington Behavioral Health is. We have contract oversight, bear the risk, create the service or provider network, and then we contract with the providers, and our payment is through capitation. Chemical dependency, very similar, but the DSHS basically contracts with counties who then they're not risk-bearing, which the RSNs are risk-bearing, and then they develop a network and contract, but it is a fee-for-service payment structure. Next slide. Now, this is the behavioral health organization option. DSHS would basically contract with a BHO, and then that BHO would have the contract oversight, management, and mental health and chemical dependency services, and bear the risk for that population for those services, and then contract with the provider network within the region. Next slide. And if you have any questions, just feel free to stop me. This is a brief description of the bill, and this has to do with the change in purchasing for mental health chemical dependency treatment services. One of the important pieces is our regional support network is now being changed to a behavioral health organization. There is a creation of a task force, which Vanessa referenced earlier, and these are some of the tasks assigned: is determine or make recommendations regarding service areas, moving from a fee-for-service chemical dependency system into the mental health capitated system, also determine some performance measures and system outcomes. And then there will be a requirement and to develop the criteria for that detailed plan for BHOs within the various service areas. Next slide. The regional service areas. This has to happen before either the early adopter and or BHO option, which is the phased-in option. This just gives a brief description of those criteria for the regional service areas. The top one is a sufficient number of Medicaid lives, as Vanessa mentioned earlier. I think you said 65,000. That's changed. I mean, you hear different. You've heard 70,000, 75,000. The state still, I don't think, has determined a hard, fast number, but it's around that. It does require all the counties to be contiguous, and it's those regions are supposed to reflect the referral patterns within that identified region. And then once identified and the regions agreed upon and approved, that will be who the state contracts with for services, either as a BHO or the early adopter option in 2016 or the full integration in 2020. Next slide. The folks that are eligible for the BHO detailed plan, and basically any RSN is able to do that. Any private entity prior to January 1st of 2014 that is not an RSN but has been serving the function of an RSN in Pierce County, it's Optum. All counties, I think it's a multi-county agreement that's formed through an interlocal agreement, can apply. And if they're choosing not to complete the detailed plan or unable to do it for whatever reason, the state will release an RFP to select an entity to serve the BHO function within that agreed upon service area. Any questions? No, yeah, we're moving. Okay.
Good.
Anyway, Connie's next.
Yeah, so
next.
Slide 10 provides an overview of the contractual requirements for a behavioral health organization. So basically, it's calling for a behavioral health organization that will be starting April 2016 to increase the usage of best promising and evidence-based practice to account for outcome performance measures that has been identified by Legislative Bill 5732-1519, and also making sure that there's sufficient network to deliver behavioral health services, making sure that we are serving people that are meeting the criteria set forth by the ASAM and the Access to Care Standard. These are all clinical tools, and making sure that we're paying providers to promote integrated behavioral health and primary care, and also improving the coordination with complex individuals with complex needs, and just making sure that there's a mechanism for monitoring the contract and there's financial integrity built into the system for behavioral organization. It's also called for an entity that are choosing to become a BHO to demonstrate their experience as well as commitment to serving the hardest to serve people. These are the homeless people, the people that are coming out of state psychiatric hospital, and also it's called for folks to have experience in basically developing partnership with multiple entities within the system. It's also called that you have to have experience having a contract with the state in the past or currently, and it's also called for BHO to integrate planning, administration, service delivery duty to consolidate administration, reduce administrative costs, as well. So the BHO would have to submit a six-year plan on outlining specific operational costs, and it's also called for tribal inclusion should it be requested as part of the BHO. Slide number 12, why should we move forward BHO as the first step towards integration? First of all, if a county or county maintain their right of first refusal for oversight behavioral health, it gives you an opportunity to do that by doing a BHO. And like the early adopter, it may require an open procurement process in order to select one or two more entities within a region. So the mental health system and chemical dependency system would evolve into a regional BHO without going through an open procurement process. This is one of the advantages of going for the BHO. It's also allowed the mental health and chemical dependency system to adapt to behavioral health integration and also give counties the counties flexibility in leveraging your existing resource right now that you have oversight of. Slide number 13, it also allow us to work with the state to address policy relating to organizational structure, financial regulations and licensing that are a barrier for mental health and chemical dependencies integration at the moment. It's also taking advantage of the time frame between now and 2019 to pilot behavioral health and physical health integration prior to full integration by 2020. It also allowed the system to build sufficient capacity to better prepare for Medicaid expansion population. It also allowed the workforce to deliver behavioral health services and also give us the opportunity for both the behavioral health and the physical health system to get to know each other in terms of operations prior to committing to full integration. I would like to share some insight from the expert that have laid the groundwork for what it takes to for mental health and chemical dependency to become an integrated system. So co-occurring, 50% of the individuals do have mental health and chemical dependency services, and it is associated with negative outcomes such as a higher rate of relapse, hospitalization, violence, incarceration, homeless, and also as well as physical health such as HIV. The parallel system right now, which is very common across the United States, it does create a fragmented system. So integration involves not only combining appropriate treatment, but it's also looking at the ability to modify the existing treatments intervention right now. It's also, they have also shared that effective integration of behavioral health services required organization and financial changes at the policy level. It's also required clarity of program mission with structure change to support dual diagnosis services. So the bottom line that we all need to ask, does full integration, integrating money into one part, result in true clinical integration at the provider level? It's also required training for supervisors and clinicians on how they're going to shift their thinking from, because they all went to school for mental health, they all went to school for chemical dependency, how are you going to shift their thinking so that they can actually achieve clinical integration? So it's involved moving from two treatment plan, mental health treatment plan, CD treatment plan, to one behavioral health treatment plan. And it's also, you need information to help consumer themselves acknowledge that they have mental health and chemical dependency so that they can advocate for an integrated services. And it's also required development of information system. Mental health has a different system, CD has a different system. How are you going to get the two information systems to talk to each other to achieve full integration? Summarize page 17. Successful integration of mental health and chemical dependency services will depend on changes at several levels. Clear policy directive with consistent organizational and financial support, program changes to incorporate the mission of addressing co-occurring disorder, support for the acquisition expertise at the clinical level, and the availability of accurate information to consumers and families. So I believe I wrapped that in 10 minutes.
I actually thought you'd skip over some stuff, not just do it faster. So.
Thank you.
You have a question.
Yes, it appears that you listed numerous opportunities for improvement.
Yes.
And surely early adoption or the that path hopefully will still allow those same opportunities. We want to continue to get better, and the special providers that specialize in each area, all of these different areas will continue we can't expect to have one size fits all and somebody does everything. The providers for those need to continue. One thing I'm aware of is, as a RSN governing board member, is the silo that we have. We've got the Medicaid funds that keep building higher and higher. I think it's currently at $28 million and increasing. That's locked up in a silo that is not able to be used across the integrated, all these different other areas that could tap those funds and make sure that we can, that they can be used to serve the, those that need the help. And that's a problem. We were doing everything we can to be able to extend help to those that need it, but it, because it's locked into our silo, those other areas of specialty cannot help those that are just coming to us. The idea of adding more flexibility to the funds that are flowing into these individual silos would be, I would think, a great plus to be able to get the right help to the right individual. Do you agree?
Commissioner, from my perspective, the flexibility that you are looking within the Medicaid payment system is only allowable by CMS. So Medicaid is a federal fund, and it's defined what kind of services that you can purchase using Medicaid fund. So regardless of whether you put the money together, if there's still string attached saying that this Medicaid dollar is only for XYZ, that's all you can use it for. So that's a challenge that we're facing within the system.
Yet those funds are locked into this one organization that can only do behavioral health services. But Medicaid also covers other services that are provided by other specialties, other silos. And that is what I'm thinking would be the better use of those funds.
And, you know, the challenge for the system is that the population that we are, mental health and CD, as Commissioner Mielke had mentioned, it is a specialty care. So the assumption from the state is that you have more money because it costs more money to serve these individuals because they have complex needs. We also have a healthy option health plan that also provide mental health services. But the level of mental health services are those individuals that don't have a high need. So that's why you see, you know, the payment per member per month is based on the high needs of population. Mm-hmm. So, and again, one thing that we have tried to advocate at the state level is for the state to get rid of the ASAM, to get rid of the access to care standard so that we can serve more people. Mm-hmm. But unless SAMHSA are not willing to do that, unless the state are not willing to open up their waiver that allow, remove those barrier, it will always be a barrier for us to tap into the funding. So that's a struggle that we face right now.
Commissioner Barge. We're fine. Vanessa?
So I thank you for listening to both of us. My recommendation is this, is that for the many reasons that you heard today, and even some of the stuff that the RSN talked about, the still the strict requirements and keeping those separate systems, I am recommending that Clark County, the commissioners, direct staff to work with our prosecuting attorney's office to draft a letter to healthcare authority telling them that we are interested in exploring an early adopter model. We want to sit down with them and negotiate on that model and process to see if we can come to a conclusion. And if we do, I'd like to come back to you guys in early August and present that to you for final approval.
I think we're going to talk about it again and four times this afternoon.
Yeah.
there's a whole bunch to take in all at once, and we'll try to be as speedy as possible.
So that's our presentation.
Yeah,
thank you.
If you can get it done before that time, fine.
Yeah. Thank you all very much.
Thank you.
We really appreciate it.
Thank you.
I'm different than you, which is I don't like being the first one that's to run out. I want to see someone else run out from the heart of the heart and stop it.
Hi, Connie. How are you?
Nothing's free.
Oh, I'm keeping
you
up.
Know that. Well, nothing's free. And the money that you're talking about, when you have mental health money, drug dependency, it has to be spent for there. It's just that the state will control it. And we don't. And the same with Medicaid. You heard it talk about the federal government never paid our doctors
what the doctors are over in Portland get.
For some reason, we are the same region as them, but we don't get the same dollars as they do for our medical providers. And because of that, they're going away. We don't have it. We have people not wanting to provide that service. And if you saw it way back when, this is going to be controlled by a big conglomerate, somebody who has a hospital. And the insurance companies are going to be bifold. The costs are worrying. Much as what the Washington Association of College Presentation said, the hospitals are going to be the provider. And then the federal government is going to come up and say, okay, I'm going to give you $500 for a broken arm. That includes the office calls, the cash, and the rehabilitation. The hospitals are going to provide all that. Nobody else can provide that and be the middleman and take your money out of the pot before you get to the actual hospital and do the work.
So, you know, listen to the presentation.